infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Greetings, and you're listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I'm your host, Tracy Savage. Tonight, I'd like to talk a little bit about something that's very curious and very interesting called the Aurora Borealis. Those pretty lights, you know, the northern lights up in the sky, ribbons of green and red and pinks and yellows that light up the sky. Well, ever wonder how does it happen? Well, I did, so I looked it up. And I'm going to share it with you. I also found some stuff that I wasn't expecting that I'm also going to share. But first, what is it and how does it happen, this Aurora Borealis? Well, to answer this, we start with the sun, whose energy production is far from even and fluctuates on an 11-year cycle. Maximum production coincides with the high sunspot activity when processes on the sun's surface throw particles far out into space. Now, these particles are called the solar wind and cause the northern lights. Now, the sun's surface temperature is approximately 6,000 degrees Celsius, which is much cooler than the interior, which is several million degrees. Now, in the sun's atmosphere, or corona, the temperature rises again to several million degrees. At such temperatures, collisions between gas particles can be so violent that atoms disintegrate into electrons and nuclei. What was once hydrogen becomes a gas of free electrons and protons called plasma. This plasma escapes from the sun's corona through a hole in the sun's magnetic field. As they escape, they're thrown out by the rotation of the sun in an ever-widening spiral, which is the so-called garden hose effect. If you've ever turned on a garden hose that's just laying in the yard at, you know, full blast, and see, watch how it whips around. That is what they're talking about. Now, after 2 to 5 days travel through space, the plasma reaches the Earth's magnetic field, compressing it on the daylight side of the Earth and stretches it into a tail on the night side. A few of the particles penetrate down to the Earth along the lines of the magnetic field in the polar areas. Most, however, are forced around the Earth by the magnetic field and enter the tail, which stretches out into a long cylinder. Now, its diameter is equivalent to 30 to 60 times the Earth's radius, and its length up to 1,000 times the same radius. Now, it is in an effect as if the Earth's magnetic field creates a tunnel in the plasma current from the solar wind. Inside one end is the Earth, and around its surface, the Earth's magnetism and solar wind interact. The magnetic tail is divided into two by a sheet of plasma, and the magnetic field lines from the Earth's north and south pole stretch out in their respective halves such that the fields are in opposition. The electrons and protons in each half of the plasma rotate in opposite direction, forming a huge dynamo with the positive pole on the side of the plasma sheet facing dawn and the negative pole facing evening. The dynamo is driven by the current of charged particles between these two poles. And when the northern lights break out, the following happens. The solar wind strengthens, and the magnetic tail becomes unstable. Charged particles dive inwards towards the center of the tail and cause it to increase in length and taper. These particles draw the magnetic field lines towards the center where they meet, causing a magnetic short circuit, so-called, approximately 15 times the Earth's radius above the Earth on the night side. This occurs especially at the dynamo's two poles, where a large amount of energy becomes stored. The magnetic field lines from both sides of the plasma layer now act as conductors in the dynamo's outer circuit. Now, if you want to go see these northern lights, I guess if you go really north, in northern regions like the Yukon, the best time to view the aurora is from late August to mid-April. During the summer months, the night skies are not dark enough to see the aurora borealis, even at times when the solar wind activity is really strong. In midwinter, the temperatures may fall to minus 40 degree range, and it's important to wear appropriate winter clothing so that you can enjoy the displays and, you know, not become part of the landscape. Now, what's the best time to see the aurora? Well, they say that the most active region of the auroral oval typically becomes visible around local midnight. This region is also the widest part of the oval, you know, the Yukon area, in the north-south direction. So your best chance of seeing aurora borealis is around local midnight. Now, note that this is astronomical midnight, which may be an hour or two different from civil or wall clock midnight due to daylight savings time or other peculiarities in your time zone. Spectacular aurora borealis displays due to geomagnetic disturbances may be seen at any time when the sky is dark, but they're relatively unpredictable. Under average conditions, observations around local midnight are most likely to yield results. Now, something that we've heard about in lore and on, you know, TV shows and whatnot is whether or not the aurora makes sounds. Now, this question is always good for a lively discussion among residents of the north. And so far, attempts to record the sound during the aurora had failed until recently to produce any proof that such sounds do exist, but it's hard to ignore the numerous reports that go back literally centuries among the native peoples in all the different regions up there. And these are generally two types of sounds they reported to accompany the aurora borealis. The first is sort of a swishing sound that changes with movements in that auroral display. And the second type is kind of a crackling sound like static electricity makes. Now, the problem with claims of sound that changes in time with auroral movement is that the aurora is a long ways away, like 100 kilometers or 60 miles. So if sound was coming from the aurora borealis, there would be a long delay, they say, between the auroral movement and the sound arriving at the listener's ears, just as thunder arrives long after a distant lightning flash is observed. Now, there's also the small detail that the air between us and the aurora is far too thin to carry sound over such long distances. Therefore, if this kind of sound exists, it must be created very near to the observer. Now, the most likely explanation, they say, again, for this type of sound is that it is created inside of the observer's head, not a figment of the imagination, but rather a leakage of the electrical impulses from the nerves in the eye carrying images of the aurora to the brain into the area where the brain processes sound. Now, in a very quiet environment, there are no sound signals for the brain to process, so it notices these tiny leakage signals, and the result is sounds that change in time with the aurora. This explanation was actually tested by some early explorers who found that the sound went away if their eyes were covered. So that's interesting. Now, the second type of sound is more mysterious. A crackling sound, like static electricity sparking, might be explained by the strong electric and magnetic fields associated with the aurora, but so far, theories and measurements have not provided a satisfactory explanation. Until now! Yes, I have found a really, really cool treasure trove of this one man's work, Stephen P. McGreevy. That's McGreevy, and he has put it out there with Creative Commons, no rights reserved, and you can just download it right off of the internet for free in community audio. He has made a collection of Earth's mysterious VLF, or very low frequency, audio frequency, natural radio signals of the Earth's magnetosphere. And he calls it the music of the magnetosphere, which actually is sort of like listening to humpback whale songs. Well, to me it was, anyway. You can tell me if that's what you think after you get done hearing it. Anyway, I am going to now play for you a little bit of his lecture regarding this. And in the background, you're going to be able to hear some of his really cool the whistling and the popping and the crackling. And then after that, I'm going to talk about a 12-year study and something really cool that just happened. So here we go.
Earth is constantly bombarded by particles from the sun. When sunspots or a solar flare send enough of these particles toward the Earth's magnetic field, the skies at both poles light up with the aurora borealis and the aurora australis. The particles also create very low-frequency electromagnetic waves, creating a type of natural radio. It can be picked up around the globe with specially designed receivers. So every year around this time, sound recordist Steve McGreevy heads north, where the reception is best, and points his receiver at the sky.
There's just a whole litany of different natural radio sounds to record. Whistlers and growlers and howlers and tweaks. These clusters like a pack of dogs barking. And in the case of this morning, we're having these very soft, hissy whistlers, which are actually fairly rare.
It's 5:24 in the morning on Monday, the 22nd of June, 1998, at Wharton Park, the Billy River Campground, Southern Alberta, Canada. And we've got these great hissy whistlers happening, and in the right channel, we're hearing the beginnings of chorus.
There was a burst of static from something pretty close, a lightning storm. Oftentimes when I'm recording, you'll hear kind of a and maybe a second or two later you'll hear a the electromagnetic pulse from the lightning bolt takes a round trip to the opposite hemisphere, and then it bounces back. And in making this long trip, the frequency components are spread out, so you get this downward falling tone, like a sigh or a hiss. These receivers are sensitive enough that a lightning storm could be happening 1,000 miles away and the static would still be strong. You can just hear all this snapping. Let me turn on this speaker amplifier. You just can imagine there is so much. Oh, in fact, we're hearing some nice noises now coming in. Okay, this is a very beautiful sounding event. This is called chorus. Particles from the sun are hitting Earth's magnetic field and generating these noises, probably several thousand miles out in space. Imagine a soap bubble with wind currents pushing against it, and you can see it deform. Well, that's essentially what happens with Earth's magnetic field. So yeah, I've got these funky-looking triangular-shaped loops, five turns of about 350 feet of wire hanging up on a tree, picking up the beautiful sounds of Mother Earth. And these vibrations of electrical and magnetic energy. And so essentially all these receivers do is pick up the Earth's radio waves and translate them directly to the same sound frequencies. And so the result is just beautiful and amazing. And it's been going on, well, for eons. And they first noticed it in England in about 1882. British telegraph operators started hearing these strange whistling tones in their headphones. But it wasn't until the 1930s when some people started associating these with visible northern lights. As electronic equipment became more available to the average experimenter and hobbyist, amateurs started listening to this using fairly crude equipment, you know, maybe a phonograph amplifier connected to a barbed wire fence in the middle of nowhere, and similar to what I did when I first heard this myself. When when I discovered Earth makes its own radio waves, I was amazed because I'm a nature enthusiast anyway, you know, always been interested in astronomy and science. I've got a long, quite checkered history with radio, beginning as a little kid playing with an AM pocket radio and tuning in distant stations at night, and I've done all sorts of crazy things, planting radio beacons in the middle of the deserts and bouncing signals off aircraft. And,
time check.
There's a station in Colorado called WWV, which does nothing but transmit the time 24 hours a day on shortwave.
All the transfer indices for 21 June follow. Solar Flux 102 and Bold AMDEX 16. Repeat, Solar Flux.
But once an hour, WWV gives lets me know what's going on with the Earth's magnetic field, and they give what they call space weather, which is what's going on in the sun and between the sun and the Earth.
Solar activity was low. The geomagnetic field was quiet to minor storms. The forecast
so,
for the next 24
hours. I'm aware that right now the Earth is in a magnetic storm, and it may be affecting power lines right now. It may be affecting satellites right now. Space weather, this invisible weather we can't really see or feel on Earth, but indeed it's going on out there. And it's wild, and it's stormy at times, and it's calm at other times. It's just like weather here on Earth.
Wow, that sounds a little bit like science fiction sound effects, but it's not. It's Mother Nature sound effects. Now, a little bit more about this. For the first time, researchers at Aalto University in Finland have located where the sounds associated with the northern lights are created. The auroral sounds that have been described in folktales and by wilderness wanderers are formed about 70 meters above the ground level in this particular measured case. Now, the researchers located the sound sources by installing three separate microphones in an observation site where the auroral sounds were recorded. Then they compared the sounds captured by the microphones and determined the location of the sound source. The aurora borealis was seen at the observation site. Simultaneous measurements of the geomagnetic disturbances made by the Finnish Meteorological Institute showed a typical pattern of the northern light episodes. Now, this is a quote from Aalto University. Our research proved that during the occurrence of the northern lights, people can hear natural auroral sounds related to what they see. In the past, researchers thought that the aurora borealis was too far away for people to hear the sounds it made. This is true. However, our research proves that the source of the sounds that are associated with the aurora borealis we see is likely caused by the same energetic particles from the sun that create the northern lights far away in the sky. These particles, or the geomagnetic disturbance produced by them, seem to create sound much closer to the ground, and this was said by Professor Unto K. Lane from Aalto University, and here is what they heard. It sounds like a clap. That's how they're describing it. Here it is again. Now, details about how the auroral sounds are created are still a mystery. The sounds do not occur regularly when the northern lights are seen, so, you know, that's real helpful. The recorded unamplified sounds can be similar to crackles or muffled bangs, which we heard before, which last for only a short period of time. Other people who have heard the auroral sounds have described them as distant noise and sputter. Because of these different descriptions, researchers suspect that there are several mechanisms behind the formation of these auroral sounds, and these sounds are so soft that one has to listen very carefully to hear them and to distinguish them from the ambient noise. And a little side trivia, regarding the Whistler wave, Voyager 1 and 2 spacecraft detected Whistler-like activity in the vicinity of Jupiter, implying the presence of lightning there. And historically speaking, Whistlers were probably heard as early as 1886 on long telephone lines, but the clearest early description was by Barkhausen in 1919. And in 1953, stories showed that Whistlers originate from lightning discharges, and you can even look that up. I know I did, and it's true. According to the report, anyway. Now, this is going to bring us to our feature presentation this evening. And, of course, we have a really cool science fiction story for you from Quiet Please, and it was created in 1947 when Willis Cooper, the creative force between Lights Out, remember we've heard a few of their shows, embarked on a new series with a new approach. Every episode would star Ernest Chappell, who would introduce the story with a narration which attempted to converse with the audience. Now, in some cases, the narrative exposition alone comprised the bulk of the show. Sound effects were severely limited, but the stories were all Cooper originals, which is sufficient reason alone to listen in. Really cool one tonight called Northern Lights. And the story opens with two scientists who are attempting to transport an object, which is a lighter, through time from one side of the room to the other. And I'm not going to tell you any more. You just have to listen. I hope you enjoy Northern Lights.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. American Broadcasting Company presents Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for today is called Northern Lights. This is a story about the temporal displacement of mass. It is also a story about teleportation. Do you know what those terms mean? No, I didn't think you did, but you stay right where you are, my charming friend, and you're quite likely to find out. You just stay right there and listen. I'll tell you everything you want to know. And maybe, well, maybe a couple of things you're not terribly anxious to know. Ever see the Northern Lights? Aurora Borealis is their right name. You don't see them very often below the 50th parallel of latitude in this country, but up in northern Minnesota and Canada, upper New York, places like that, they're quite common of a winter night. If you've seen them, you know what they look like. If you haven't, there's no use my trying to describe them. Sometimes they fill a whole northern sky with waves of color, like a fire burning way beyond the horizon. Sometimes they're just long streamers of fire filling up the whole sky. And another time they look like gigantic, fringed curtains of pure light, swaying as if some cold cosmic breeze plucked at them. Way far off there to the north. And you can hear them, too, sometimes. Well, maybe not exactly hear them, but there's a sound, a humming, a crackling somewhere inside your head. And there are times when you'd swear it's a voice talking to you, talking in some kind of strange language you can almost understand, filling your whole being with a kind of desperate, inescapable terror. You know what I mean? At night, in the cold night, voices talking and saying things to you that you can almost understand, filling the night sky with signs and portents of inescapable terror. And nobody in the whole world knows what they are, nobody in this world at least, except me. And after I get done talking to you, you'll know too. And you won't be happy. Let me show you something now. This is from a recording I made on, December 13th, 1948, a little more than a month and a half ago. I started the recorder while Norman and I were just about finished with our work that afternoon here in the laboratory. I just set the microphone on top of the file cabinet there and turned on the machine. Listen, I'm going to play it back for you. The quality isn't so very good, but you can recognize my voice and Norman's, I think. Here.
Well, I got the coil rewound now, I guess.
Ready to test it?
How can I test it when I said I just got a rewound?
Well, hurry up. It's almost 6 o'clock.
Yeah. Well, it's dark, but I didn't realize the time.
Hurry up.
I'm hurrying. Be a display tonight, you suppose?
How do I know? Been a display the last 3 nights.
Well, that was a dinger last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, the machine wasn't ready.
Hey, listen, now, do you think you can do better than I can? Ouch!
What's the matter?
Oh, I stuck my finger.
Where'd you put the copper sulfate?
Oh, up above the sink.
Huh? I got it. What are you doing?
Testing the coil.
How's it?
Oh, it looks okay. Hey, wait a minute. Yeah, it's okay.
I'll be right with you. Hook it up.
What are you going to send?
You try my cigarette lighter. That won't work anyway. I won't miss it if we don't get it back.
I don't know how the thing will work when the northern lights aren't shining.
Well, maybe they are shining. Turn off the room light. Let's see.
All right.
Pretty early, I hear.
What's the matter?
Hey, look.
Out early tonight. Oh, boy, that's fine. The whole sky. Look, blue and yellow. I never saw those long fringes before.
Never the same.
Oh, say, did you turn on the recorder?
Yep.
Yeah, it's turning over. Let's see. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their party.
Now leave it alone. You about ready now?
Well, it's funny about the aurora.
Northern lights?
Listen to this part closely, friend.
Oh, I don't know.
Remember what I told you.
You can almost hear the darn things. Not hear them, I mean, but it's kind of like somebody talking to you in a language you can almost understand. I don't know. I mean, you ever notice it?
Sure. High frequencies, I guess. Something.
Awful lot we don't understand.
Look, you go over there at the recorder and talk into the mic.
Talk what?
Well, just describe what happens for the record.
I'm no announcer.
I know you're not, but just say what you see so we'll have an accurate record.
Okay. Now?
Go ahead.
This is an experiment in the temporal displacement of a solid object. In other words, the first actual demonstration of a time machine, if it works.
It'll work all right. Go on.
Paul is now placing his old beat-up cigarette lighter on the stage of the hypercucambulator, and he is now setting the microchronometer to determine how far into the future he's going to send the lighter. Well, how far, Paul?
10 seconds.
At the end of that time, if our calculations are correct, and we hope they are, the cigarette lighter will reappear. In that period of time, it will have been into the future. We could send it farther into the future if we wanted to, I guess, but we'd just have to wait that much longer for time to catch up with it and make it reappear. But 10 seconds, well, I mean, we can prove our point by sending it 10 seconds into the future just as well as 10 years ahead, and this way we don't have to wait so long. Hey, how am I doing, Paul?
I go into your commercial.
When Paul presses the little button, the cigarette lighter will turn to nothing.
Yeah, that's not right. It'll be here, but it'll be 10 seconds.
Now, listen closely, please.
Yeah. Well, now,
what's going to happen?
Mr. Paul McGilligot, a famous mad scientist, is about to press the big old button and send his lighter into the future. You ready, Paul?
Here we go. Stand by. Look, Norm!
By golly, it is gone. It just disappeared. Bang, like that.
Hold your watch up close to the mic, Paul, so it'll record.
Yeah. There isn't a sign of the lighter. The little stage on which Paul placed it is empty, and it should appear again in just a second if it really did work. 3, 2, 1.
It's back! Hey, it's back, Norm!
It worked! We made it! Oh, man, let's see if it's all right. Ouch! Oh,
now what?
Oh, the lighter. Oh, it's cold, Paul. Ooh, here. Take it, Paul. Take it. Oh, it's freezing cold.
What do you know? The darn thing's like a piece of ice.
Now, where the dickens do you suppose it's been in that 10 seconds?
No, wait, friend.
You know,
that's
it,
not
it
the
right
payoff yet.
You said, only in the future.
Listen.
And time's caught up with it. It's back, but...
Hey, Paul, look. Where did that come from?
What?
There on the stage where the lighter was. Where'd that come from? In the middle of winter.
What is it?
do you suppose it came from?
Well, it wasn't there.
I'll tell you where it came from, Paul.
What?
It came from the same place where the cigarette lighter went.
What are you talking about?
Well, feel it, Paul. Feel its fur. See? It's as cold as ice, too.
A caterpillar. A little brown and black caterpillar, the kind they call woolly bears. You know, larva of the tiger moth, the Icaea Isabella. In the dead of winter and as cold as ice. Where did it come from? Huh? You want to know. Incidentally, you know, the old-timers say that the woolly bear caterpillar is a weather prophet. If the brown bands on his fur are narrow, there's a severe winter ahead. If they're wide, it's going to be a mild winter. Yeah, maybe. This one, you could hardly see the brown bands. Tough weather ahead, that's what the old-timers would say. But where'd she come from? She wasn't there when we put the cigarette lighter on the stage. When time caught up again, there she was. She? Sure, Isabella. I see her, Isabella. I told you, remember? Well, she was wiggling happily when she arrived from somewhere in the future. But as she warmed up, she seemed to go into a trance, almost a death-like trance. So Norman said, put her in the deep freeze. Maybe she'll come to again in the cold. So we put her in the deep freeze. And in half an hour, when we looked in at her, she was wiggling happily. At 10 degrees below zero, friend. Now, can you tie that? My goodness, she should have been frozen solid. Well, nothing special happened for a couple of days. That, you remember, was a month and a half ago, December 13th, 1948. Where were you on the night of December 18th? Saturday night, a week before Christmas. I'd been Christmas shopping in the afternoon, I remember. I came back to the laboratory to check up on some stuff. And Norman was there, fiddling with things. Hi, Norm, I said. How's Isabella?
You know something funny, Paul?
What's the matter with you?
Who, me?
You look so pale. You sick? Eat something? Disagreed with you?
Paul, Isabella's singing.
Singing what? Isabella's singing? You're dotty.
She's singing. The caterpillar's singing.
Not tap dancing, I hope.
I'm not kidding you.
Oh, cut it out.
Open the deep freeze and listen.
You've been at the C2H5OH?
I haven't had a drink since Thursday night.
Well, now, what?
Open the deep freeze and listen.
No kidding?
No kidding.
Well, we don't know where she came from. I won't be surprised at anything. Hello, Isabella.
Hey, don't do that.
What's the matter? Afraid she'll answer me back?
Well, I don't know what.
Hello, Isabella. I hear you singing.
I told you, Paul.
I don't hear anything.
Now, listen, Paul. I haven't lost my buttons. I've been hearing it all afternoon. I couldn't figure out what was doing it, and then I noticed it was louder alongside the deep freeze here. So I opened it up and stuck my head inside, and it was coming from her.
Yeah. What did it sound like, Norm?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like A-E-I.
A-E-I? Didn't she say A-E-I-O-U and sometimes W and Y?
Now, don't rib me. I tell you, I heard it.
I think you better take a Christmas vacation, Norm.
I'm not nuts.
I know, kid, I know, but listen. We've been playing around with some pretty deep cosmic secrets, you and me. We've managed temporal displacement, which nobody in the world has ever done, see? Maybe we both need a rest.
You know what I think, Paul?
What?
I think we've managed teleportation, too. And we don't know it.
Teleportation? You mean like Charles Fort talks about?
I mean transporting tangible objects from one place to another without any mechanical means.
Electronically?
I don't know, Paul. All I know is that cigarette lighter was someplace where it was awful cold. And it wasn't cold here in this room.
Well.
And where did that caterpillar come from?
I don't know.
It came from wherever that cigarette lighter went, Paul.
But where?
I don't know. Somewhere. And you know what? I'm going to find out where it came from.
You are? And how, may I ask you?
I'm going to modify this gadget of ours, this hypercucambulator, so it'll carry a man. And then, my dear boss, I'm going to sit down in it and have you send me out there somewhere in time and space and come back and tell you all about it.
That's all for tonight, bud.
What?
Come on, I'll take you out and buy you a drink.
I'm not fooling, Paul.
Okay, okay, you're not fooling, Norm. Get your hat and coat and come on. I prescribe hot-buttered rum.
Well.
Turn off the lights.
Will you listen to me for
a minute? Turn off the lights. I want hot butter drum.
Okay, okay.
Gosh, look out of that window.
The northern lights. Oh, they're really bright tonight.
They sure are.
Look how they pulse. Up, down. Up, down.
Norm.
Up, what?
Look at the deep freeze there in the dark.
What about?
You see it?
Light, Paul. Light.
I see it, Norm. It's right in step with the northern lights.
And the same colors. Red, red. Blue, blue. Up, down. Up.
Coming
down.
From the deep freeze where our little friend down. Isabella was singing to you. Now, what
hey,
do you...
Paul, listen.
I don't...
Listen.
Rum. We stayed there in the laboratory for a long time, listening to the voice of the thing in the box, endlessly repeating A-E-I-O-U, the vowel sounds of our speech, and watching the light that pulsed up from the deep freeze in perfect rhythm with the flickering of the northern lights we watched through the window. And we thought long, long thoughts that I don't remember any too clearly now. I do know we both of us thought of ways to perfect our little mechanism, our time machine. Our machine that brought back a little... cold, brown and black caterpillar from somewhere. And when it was morning, and the lights had faded from the northern skies, we found that our machine was very different. The stage where we found the caterpillar was larger now. I had only a vague recollection of what had happened in the night. I said to Norm, Norman, I said, what did we do last night?
I don't know for sure, Paul.
Did we rebuild that thing? Make it larger?
I don't know. I think I dreamed I was working on it. I think I hit my finger with a hammer.
I see. Thumb's all bruised. Certainly looks it.
Well, nobody could have gotten in here. The door's locked.
The machine's certainly different.
This coil, I think. Look. It's rewound it. Did I do that?
My head hurts.
Yeah, mine too.
Oh, I don't get it.
I don't either. I wish I could.
Listen, Norm.
What?
Maybe we did change it.
But I... Well, how could we have done all that by ourselves?
I got an idea.
What?
Why, maybe Isabella helped us.
The caterpillar? Oh,
let's see, shall we?
Open the deep freeze.
Well, I opened it. It was empty. There wasn't any brown and black caterpillar in the deep freeze. We took a flashlight and looked over every inch of it. We stood there and looked at each other. For a whole minute. Norman said, well. I just shook my head. We went over and sat down. All of a sudden, I said, I found her, Norman. And there she was. There was little Isabella, the caterpillar, crumpled up, stone dead on the floor of the laboratory. Now, you know, caterpillars have little tiny paws. And one of Isabella's paws was the end of a long piece of wire that ran up to the generator coil.
Well, how did she get out?
And I said the thing couldn't be opened from the inside. I said it was fastened down tight when I took the lid off just now.
But she did get out.
Maybe she did help us, Norm, I said. And he just sat there and stared at me. And I got up and put on my overcoat.
Where are you going? Where are you going, Paul?
I said, I'm going to find out something, Norman. Where I'm going, it's cold, I said. I know that, and I'm going to find out what's been going on and where that caterpillar came from. Norman goggled at me. I stepped on the stage of the machine that was to take me away somewhere in time and space. I said, Norman, turn it on. Reached over and touched the switch. He didn't say a word. and I braced myself. I nodded at him. Go ahead, I said. And he pressed the switch. And nothing happened at all. Nothing. Why?
I know, Paul, I know. It's daylight, and there aren't any northern lights.
Well, it was just as well. I had a chance to think about it a little, and I realized that just an overcoat wouldn't do me any good where I might be going. And so when it was dark night again and northern lights were flickering and dancing in the sky, I put on a high-altitude aviator suit that had its own source of heat supply. Norman shook his head as I got back on the stage, nodded for him to press the switch. Cold. You've never been cold, friend. Dark. You wouldn't know how dark it can get. And then I was standing on an immense plain that stretched so far into the distance, a plain of snow and eternal ice. A dead, cold, white world with the blackest sky above me. And the northern lights reached from horizon to horizon. Even through the high-altitude suit, I could feel a biting cold. And I was afraid, shivering, abjectly afraid. The streamers of the northern lights reached down toward me and wrapped about me. I heard the sound of voices screaming into my mind. I could understand them. I wished heartily I'd never played around with cosmic forces. I yelled inside the heavy helmet. I yelled, Norman! Norman, bring me back! And there was nobody to hear me. No, I don't know where I was. Another planet. Maybe the North Pole. Maybe the lights were all around me. Maybe that's where it was. But it was the most terrible, awful, cold, lonely place you could imagine in 100 years. The lights, the flickering, living lights crawled over me and beat at me. I could almost understand what they were saying. And then, a crash. A sudden blackness. I was standing again in the laboratory I'd left only a few short seconds ago, and Norman was tearing at the fastenings of my suit and beating at me with both hands. I wondered what in the world he was doing until I got the helmet off. He was brushing caterpillars off me. Thousands of cold, freezing cold, brown and black Isabella caterpillars. I was in bed for a week or more, I don't know how long. Wherever it was I'd been, I'd nearly frozen to death in those short seconds. And at last, I was able to come back to the laboratory. I sat there that night with Norman. And outside the windows, the northern lights were brighter than they'd ever been before. Purple, green, yellow. Black lights, even. And there was a new rhythm tonight. A kind of code. Almost words. Thoughts. Not quite formed, and yet curiously disturbing. Norman, though, didn't seem to be as disturbed as I was. He just sat quietly and looked at me.
Where did those caterpillars come from, Paul?
I don't know. Where I was, that's all I know.
Did they attack you, or?
I don't know. They came from the lights.
The lights?
The northern lights. Where are they, Norman?
The caterpillars?
Yes. Where are they?
In the deep freeze, where Isabella was.
Poor Isabella.
What's the matter with you, Paul?
I'm listening.
Listening to what?
Don't you hear them?
I don't hear anything.
Don't you?
I don't hear anything.
Well, listen. Listen.
I don't hear anything.
Turn on the recording machine. I want to see if we could pick up their voices.
There isn't anything.
Turn it on. Turn it on. I want a recording. Quick. Quick, Norman. They're talking to us. Listen, friend. I want to play you another recording. This is what came out of our tape recorder that night when I was listening to the voices. And Norman couldn't hear anything. Just listen.
I still don't hear anything, Paul.
Be still. Listen.
I tell you,
Listen.
What's that?
Look at the deep freeze.
The top's coming open. Look at the light around it, Paul.
Be quiet. Watch.
How did they... Good Lord, look. The caterpillars are coming out, Paul. Look at them. There's millions of them.
Be still, Norman.
But Paul, your voice.
Be still, I said.
What's the matter with your voice?
We want to talk to you.
You what? You said we.
Why, of course, Norman. We.
Who for the...
It is Paul's voice, Norman. Paul's voice. Voice. But it is not Paul speaking. Listen. We speak to you.
Paul.
Not Paul. We, the people of the lights. We from the cold. We are speaking to you with Paul's voice.
I tell you that...
Paul's voice will tell you what to do when the time comes, Norman. We go to the machine now. Paul's mind is ours for a little time now. We go to the machine. The machine that brought us to your world from the world of the lights.
Who are you? Who?
The people of the lights. To take over this world of yours. Only this world of yours is so hot. We must have the cold world. And we know how to make it cold.
What's the matter, Paul? Paul!
So hot.
No, no.
Quick, Norman. Turn on the machine. Send us to places in your world. No, our world. Hurry. So hot. Hurry. So hot.
Paul!
Hurry. Hurry. Turn on the machine.
That's the end of the recording. No, I don't know. I don't have any recollection of it at all. But the recording there, isn't it? That must be what happened. Anyway, when I woke up, Norman was gone, and there were no caterpillars in the place here. And our machine that took people and things away into time and space, was wrecked. I don't know what became of it. You heard what they said about my voice. They're going to take over this world and make it a cold world, like the one they came from. Whatever that is. And wherever they went. No, I don't know where they went, where the machine sent them. I do have ideas. Yes. Are you cold? It's freezing in here. And just for example, you read the papers? Look at the newsreels. Did you see the pictures of the snow in Los Angeles? In subtropical Los Angeles, where it hasn't snowed for so many, many years? I wondered about it, too. I wonder if anybody saw any brown and black woolly bear caterpillars in Los Angeles. Larva of the tiger moth I see, Isabella. The title of today's Quiet Please story is Northern Lights. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell. And my laboratory assistant, Norman, was played by Dan Sutter. The voices of Isabella and her friends was that of Cecil Roy. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Now for a word about next week. Our writer-director, my good friend, Willis Cooper.
Thank you for listening to Quiet Please. For next week, I have a story for you that comes from the steel mills out South Chicago way. It's called Tap the Heat, Bogdan.
And so, until next week at this same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
Well, I hope you enjoyed Northern Lights by Willis Cooper from the show Quiet Please, which he considers his finest work. I liked Lights Out quite a bit. It was aired at midnight to catch the listeners' attention at the witching hour. That show specialized in grisly horror, blood-curdling acting, and menacing sound effects, which is, pretty much the reason why I listened to it. But I guess we can add modern folklore to the old legends. As often happens with these legends, with the Northern Lights, even a single tale can diverge off of many different paths. Scottish folklore refers to the Aurora as merry or nimble men. However, what the men were trying to tell us ranges from simple weather prediction to the red blood of clans, warring to the struggles over beautiful women in heaven. Irreverently, Russian folklore refers to the Borealis Lights as a fire dragon who comes in the nights to seduce the wives when their husbands were gone. You can almost hear the desperate pleas from the one man left in the village who didn't go off on the war explained to the armed horde returning after a year's time why all the women were pregnant. It was the dragon! Really, trust me, we saw him. We all saw him. It was the ugly monster. Now, the North American Indians, like most Europeans, would see the Aurora Borealis frequently, but were nonetheless quite impressed with it, and there was a common belief that the lights were campfire reflections in the distant north, where gods may be trying to provide light and heat. Specific legends show a rich and varied host of explanations. The Mandar of North Dakota concurred that they were reflections of northern tribe fires, but additionally added that the fires were to heat pots in which to simmer their dead enemies. And the Fox of Wisconsin felt the lights were omens of war and pestilence, being the spirits of those enemies they'd killed rising up, restless for revenge. And in the same geographic area, however, the Menominee pleasantly thought that the lights were made by the torches of friendly giants spearfishing at night. Wondrously, the Lakota Sioux saw the light approaching and rolling in the sky to be the souls of generation yet unborn coming toward their destination. And a warm and loving account comes from the Algonquin, who felt the lights were from huge fires maintained by the creator god, and he was sending them to show that he remembered them. So you have quite a few there. Old Scandinavian word for the light translates as herring flash, signifying reflections of large schools of fish reflecting into the night sky. And altogether differently, an old Icelandic legend says that the lights ease labor pains, while at the same time cause the child to be cross-eyed if the mother looked at them. Uh-oh, go figure. Equally complex and detailed, but similarly odd, some Scandinavian tales say that the lights originate from the resting place of spirits of unmarried women busying themselves there, cooking, dancing, and waving their hands while wearing white gloves. I don't know why they were wearing white gloves, but they were wearing white gloves according to the legend. Now, actually, some of the Finnish legends felt that it was... they're fox fires, and they come from sparks of a fox tail as he drags it through the night, which is kind of interesting because now we have Firefox as a web browser. I wonder if that's related. I don't know. I have to look that up. Now, the Danish lore says that the aurora was said to be the reflections off the beating wings of large flocks of swans trapped by ice. Yikes. And, of course, one of the more wider known mythology is that the aurora was believed to be come from the Valkyrie, which translates as choosers of the slain. Their court out of Asgard is made up of warlike virgins on horseback sent to Odin to collect the souls of brave warriors and guide them back to Valhalla. And there they will party for eternity, awaiting the final battle between Odin and hostile giants in a final cataclysmic contest. Partying gods, fire coming from foxtails, enemies seeking revenge, and virgins waving their hands with white gloves. And the best we could do in this century was you know, Willis Cooper, so that wasn't too bad, actually, you know, sort of melding science with fiction there. And anyway, I hope you enjoyed tonight's show, and this brings us to the close of another episode of Savage Science Radio. I'd like to thank Nick Palucco for the beautiful show graphics, Dennis Bond and Hawk Productions for that really cool intro we use every week, and Todd Sheets, executive producer of Savage Science Radio and owner of Jackalope 105 FM. And until next week, keep your powder in your pants dry, and happy trails to you.
Shout! I am known to do so.